Welcome to episode 41 of the Band of Gamers podcast. My name is Greylock3491, and this week I'm joined by DBQ Hams.
Welcome back, everyone.
And Zeus Adamus.
I apologize in advance for this being a horrible allergy night.
Yeah, those are definitely going around. I know Osiris Prime really wanted to be here tonight, but he also has a cough, and he just didn't think we would enjoy having him in the conversation if he was coughing all night. So thank you, Osiris. We miss you, and we hope to see you next week. And we want to thank all our listeners for coming back and listening to the show. And like we start every week, we're going to just share a little bit about what we've been playing over the last 7 days. And so, DB, if you wouldn't mind to kick it off, give us two or three things you've been playing this week.
So before I dive into what I've been playing, I've been watching. Over the weekend, I watched the Heroes of the Storm Spring Championship. So this is Blizzard's MOBA. You know, it's fun because I've, you know, if you look back at the early podcasts here, I have been playing this and loving it. But the fun part about it was that my sons and I ended up watching part of the semifinals, and they've seen me play it and didn't really understand all of it, and so it was almost like talking through a game of football in terms of why the strategy, you know, why they ran this play versus that play, or how they were going to approach it. So that was a pretty fun piece. In terms of actual gameplay, I played a little bit of odds and ends, right? So I played Hyrule Warriors Legends. So this is the 3DS game that is Hyrule Warriors, which was a Wii U game from 2014. It fits into that Dynasty Warriors mold of kind of running through a battlefield and slashing up all kinds of things. And Zeus, I know that you've been talking on the forums in terms of what to do with your 3DS. So this I played on both my new 3DS, like the one with the C-stick that controls the camera, and I've played both without 3D and with 3D, and it runs a whole lot smoother without 3D. And, you know, the 3D looks nice, but it doesn't add a whole lot. And then I moved it over to my original Ocarina of Time DS from 2011, and that frame rate just chugs. So I had a really fun experience. I really enjoyed it. It plays out a little bit differently than Hyrule Warriors on the Wii U. The story setup is a little bit different. You're able to jump back and forth from different characters, and so it feels a little more strategic, like you've got to be managing a whole lot on your battlefield. But I'm also just pushing the same button over and over again a whole lot. Zeus, so you had a question on this?
Yeah, so do you think that the performance hits you're seeing is, I guess I kind of answered, I gave you the answer that I was, shifting forward in the question. What I meant to say was, do you think that the slowdown you're hitting is a performance issue that the game is hitting? I know the new 3DS, which sounds ridiculous to say a little bit, because the new 3DS was the February 2015 model, right?
Yes, right? I mean, it's not that new, and even just the labeling of new 3DS is even worse than Wii U versus Wii, but I completely think it is its processor speed. It is, you know, there's, even on the new 3DS, there's pop-in, but it doesn't really matter because you assume that in a game like Dynasty Warriors, you're going to run through a space and there's going to be more guys there to slash up. The challenge with running it on an old 3DS is that the frame rate just, it feels like I'm in a flipbook almost, where on the new 3DS, it feels very fluid. It's a lot of fun, but it's also really disappointing. So if this is something that you enjoyed, or it fits really well as a portable game. I mean, it's not a game where you're going to sit down and play hours of because it's so repetitive. And so it's really kind of disappointing that that it runs so poorly on an original 3DS when that's the majority of what's out there versus the new 3DS. Zeus, you have a 3DS XL, right?
Right, but the I guess the original Bloodline. So it's not the new one with the higher speed CPU. And I don't know if the new one has increased memory. I know it's a faster CPU, but so this game is not one that was specifically spec'd for the new one, 'cause I think it's like I think it's Xenogears Saga or something that only plays on the new 3DS. It's not supported by the original hardware set. Is this the same thing, or it actually plays on both?
So that's correct. Xenoblade 3DS, the you know, the portable version of the Wii game is, I think, the only physical release that is a new 3DS exclusive. And that runs really well. I own that game. I've enjoyed it. It's been fun. I certainly could get back into it. But it runs very smoothly on the new 3DS. Where this is slated to run on both the original 3DS and new 3DS. But on the original 3DS, the 3D of the 3DS doesn't even work. That it's shut down. In order, it's using so much of the processor that it's not even allowing it to run in 3D in order to maintain some semblance of a frame rate. So, which, you know, I think really limits people who might be interested in this game because of the fact that the new 3DS is not as, you know, the market share of that is not as high.
Well, do you even know? I mean, are those things? Because those things aren't just like specially labeled, right? It's kind of just like, you know, later versions of the Xbox 360, and I can't remember, but like they had code names because the processor fab had been improved and the heat sinks were different. But you walk into the store, the thing that was bothersome about the Xbox 360 was like you had the stinking like specifically Google and like look up like the serial numbers for the series of like the ones with the better processor. So when you walked in the store, you could try and make sure that you got like a new unit with a better heat sink. It was completely ridiculous, but this is the same way, right? The new ones aren't like labeled or anything, and it's no different name, so somehow you just have to figure out or know that you're getting a new one.
So on the front of the case, there's nothing that delineates it new 3DS only. Where on the Xenoblade, that it very specifically says only for the new 3DS. I think on the back of the box, it does give you some hints in terms of, you know, so I have this from GameFly, but I've seen it in stores. And so on the back of the box, it does give you some indication of the limitations of the original, but that's only in the 3D. It has nothing on the back of the box about you know, a ViewMaster style frame rate. So, no, unfortunately, you know, a lot of the reviews out there do talk about it in this way, but for a parent picking this up for a kid or somebody picking up for a birthday or a present, you know, they're not gonna notice this. So the other, go ahead, Zeus.
No, you're good. I was just going to tell you I was done.
Yeah, so the other game I've been playing is last week at the there was a big Final Fantasy 15 reveal with Florence and the Machine singing a cover of Stand By Me for it, along with in true Final Fantasy fashion, a 3D computer graphic movie and a web animated series of the different characters. But there's also a new demo that's out on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One called Final Fantasy 15 Platinum Demo. I played through it. It's about maybe 20 to 30 minutes of a demo. And I played through the final boss a second time just because I was starting to get the hang of the combat system. And it plays a little bit somewhere in the middle of like an action-y Final Fantasy and Kingdom Hearts. So it's not a, you know, a one-for-one button press, but it is very much action-oriented. You know, I didn't play the Final Fantasy Deuce demo from last year, but the graphics look nice. I mean, it really has gotten me interested in the game, but Yeah, it's also has really nothing to do with the game except for the fact that, this is a dream sequence from the main character, and so it's this all standalone thing. But it does unlock a carbuncle, which is a summon. So it unlocks something in the final game. It's free, it's out there. If you're interested in Final Fantasy or you've thought the idea of a slow RPG isn't so exciting, this has a much more action-oriented feel, and so it might be worthwhile to checking out. The graphics look really nice. Even on the Xbox One, it looks pretty good. And so I've enjoyed that. I kind of have some other. I've had some other fun this week with some co-op with Zeus and some other friends from CAG. But for the most part, it's been kind of putzing away at those two 3DS and that Final Fantasy demo. So Zeus, how about you? Have you had a reason to pick up your 3DS, or are you playing other things?
Yeah, no, I still haven't had. I mean, I've got reasons to pick it up. I just don't get around to it. I mean, I have Bravely Default to go through. I have an Ace Combat game and a Call of Duty game that are actually pretty decent on the 3DS. It's just, there's a lot of good things to play right now across all sorts of different platforms. So there we are. So what I have been playing is, I played a little Grid 2 on the PC last week, so I brought out my Ferrari wheel and pedals and headed back into Grid 2. The campaign in Grid 2 is probably arguably the first of these racing games that just in Gran Turismo 5 kind of fashion just really made the career mode like just overly complicated like for no reason. Whereas Grid 1, you had the three different leagues. You had like nine events in each league on each tier, and you just picked whatever you wanted to race, and you just proceeded through that. But like Grid 2, like forces you through like stages, and each stage only has like four or five events you can race in, and then there are challenges. And I'm like, it's a survey racing sim. Just give me, 30 or 40 cars to drive. Let me pick whatever events I want to go into. Don't bother me with like specifics about the career. Just let me earn points, and as I earn points, unlock additional tiers of cars. I don't know. It just, and I get it. I think I get it. I guess there's just an effort to try and make racing games more like RPG-like, or to inject elements that EA does with like its sports games, where they try to make sports games like your NBA career mode or whatever, but like I don't play that stuff in those sports games, and I definitely don't need it in my racing games. But the racing is great. And I can't remember. Have any of you guys played Grid 2, or is it something you've been looking at?
I haven't, but my brother last night was saying the same thing about Forza 6. He's like, I just wanted to get my cars and go race and race whatever I wanted to race and not be forced into kind of a linear type of track. And I was kind of wondering you mentioned Grid 1. Are there other racing games out there that were like Grid 1 that didn't kind of make you feel like you were forced into this linear progression?
I feel like, the other Forza games, like Forza Horizon, seems to back off of that. Although you pick what event you want to go to, and then you go around the map, right? And it strongly suggests for you to go to certain spots on the map, but I don't think you're directly constrained to do that, except for like the first couple races. I got to go back and play Forza 6 because I thought Forza 6 did a pretty decent job. I mean, Forza 5's wide open. Gran Turismo 6 seemed to get back a little closer to the original career formula. Like Gran Turismo 5 was just horrific, and it frustrated me to no end. And Project Cars seems pretty open, at least the PC version. I know we've talked about that it seems like maybe on the Xbox version there were some constraints on where you could go in career, but on the PC it seems to be fine. I just, at the end of the day, I guess still the apex for me was Project Gotham Racing 3, where there's just, here's a bunch of cars, here's a bunch of tracks, earn a bunch of money, go buy new cars, put them in your garage, go pick what track you want to go race on, right? It was just dead simple, and I'm sure that there's a population of racing gamers who ask for more than that, but I don't need more than that. I just need cars and a checkerboard of racetracks and let me drive whatever I want whenever I want.
You know, I think PGR 3 was the last racing game I totally completed. Like, I did every single race. And, man, those garages were awesome. You could put your cars any way you wanted. You kind of could decorate your garages a little bit. I mean, nobody, PGR 4, I don't even think PGR 4 had that. And why don't more games do that? I love that about PGR 3. What a fun, fun game. Oh, great game.
Yeah, and it's so funny when I consider the DNA of that game, right? That, you know, going back to the original Project Gotham Racing, I remember
right? MSR on the DS.
Oh, yeah.
I have that, yes. It was like Project Gotham Racing 0.5.
right. But I can remember putting PGR, the original, in my original Xbox and going, kudos? What the heck is this thing called Kudos, right? But, you know, it turns out that they got that system to work, and it stuck, and it was effective, and, you know, it, you know, by PGR 3, I think you had Kudos and, I think you had Kudos and Dollars, so you bought your car with Dollars, but you still had Kudos just for, like, gamer points or something like that, but, man, that studio, Bizarre Creations, you know, may they rest in peace, because that studio is closed now, after having been purchased by Activision. But, man, they just honed and honed and honed and wired that formula to a razor sharp edge. I played some Grid 2. There's video up on my channel rounding off Infinity of that gaming session. It is not a gaming session I'm proud of. Playing with wheels and pedals is nice and very immersive, you know, the setup has to be just perfect. You know, you have to have the right shoes on with the right amount of friction, or else your feet slide on the pedals. And, you know, my sandals I was wearing was falling off. I had to go change shoes, and then it's just a mess. So, but, you know, I recorded it because, you know, my video thing is like a video diary or video blog, and I guess I have to record the good with the bad. And then, of course, I played Halo 5 with DBQ, but he covered that already, so I won't get into it too much. Just going back and playing through the co-op campaign, and it was pretty cool because I'm seeing cutscenes that I missed when I was playing it with Gray and some of the other guys on CAG. I completely missed that whole cutscene where Locke finally, you know, meets up with Master Chief, and I knew I was missing something. So it was great seeing that cutscene because Locke gets handled just like you would expect him to by Master Chief. And then the last thing is I played, finally got in Gray. Unfortunately, I got in on a Sunday that you were not available, but Downriver Rat from the site, and I played Homeworld Remastered on the multiplayer beta, and it was awesome. It felt like being in an episode of Battlestar Galactica. We immediately went very tactical, you know, coordinating our efforts, you know, multiple task forces showing up and rendezvousing with combined arms, you know, so he was kind of focusing on interceptors and corvettes, and then I would show up with the heavies, so he would be peppering the destroyers, and then by the time my task force rendezvoused with his, you know, I would be bringing in the destroyers and the ion cannon frigates. You know, he was, one of the really cool things is he would start taking on capital ships, and I would kind of send forces over and burn through his position to go attack high-value targets beyond him, distance-wise, while he was occupying the capital ships. So, in one case, he was taking on a task force of frigates, an enemy task force of frigates, and I slipped through that battle line to attack all of the enemy's resource collectors. So we immediately pinched his ability to gather resources, and then another instance when we went to attack the mothership, he started taking on the mothership, and I burned through that position as well, and immediately started taking down his research vessel so that we could lock his technology advancements in place. while we continue to build more complex ships. So, Gray, how were your sessions with Downriver Rat, and did you have that kind of excitement despite the age of that game?
Yeah, similar. I think over our first couple of sessions, we really learned a lot. So I kind of sad I missed out on that session. I'll be looking forward to looking in the forums to see when you guys schedule another one, because it sounds like I can definitely see myself helping out with that now that I know the controls and I know how to play.
That's awesome, man. So did you by chance get into any racing games this week?
You know, no, I didn't. I was just thinking as we were talking about PGR, the other one I really miss is Burnout. You know, PGR and Burnout, those should have been games that were released maybe not every year, but every 2 years, maybe every 3 years. They were just awesome games. Burnout Paradise. Talk about just, and not so much like the other Burnout games, but just awesome. Just totally awesome. And you know, PGR 3. 4 was good, too. 4 added motorcycles, I think, in rain or weather, but lost some of the things like the garage and whatnot. 2 games I really miss. But no, I did not play any racing game. I actually snuck in. The wife had some things to do this week, and so Saturday afternoon I texted my brother Spiral, and we got a little co-op division in. I was helping him with one of his lower-level characters. And then on jumped into some more division on Sunday, and Jetty, my buddy Jetty, jumped in. And I love this drop in and drop out co-op. But go ahead, Zeus. What were you going to say?
No, I'm a little bit behind. I was going to make a comment on your statement about racing games because it just occurred to me, and it was kind of a mind blowing epiphany. I was like, "Whoa, PGR3 backwards compatibility on Xbox One." That's what we need. Dude, I would probably shut down all my new games and just play, like, PGR3 forever.
Oh, it was great. And I think it even had, like, a co-op mode where you could, like, you and your friend could be on the same team in race against AI. And you could kind of block each other and try to keep the AI behind you. And it also supported System Link. I actually think I bought extra copies of it so we could do it at the LAN parties we used to have. Which I really miss doing. I love LAN parties. But, yeah, I would love to do some PGR 3 BC.
Yeah, no doubt, man. But what else have you been playing that's more modern and up to date?
Yeah, so just loving the Division drop-in, drop-out. And was playing Destiny every Sunday night around 6. I jump on with a couple friends and play a little Destiny story. And you know, I'm glad that people in the Division made a lot of the things similar to Destiny. For instance, the color of the guns, you know, white to green to blue to purple to yellow. It's like, thank you. Thank you for making them similar so I don't have to relearn everything. But just really enjoying those two games. Those are my big two games of the week. And go ahead, DB. You got a question?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It made the Division very easy to dive into when the color scheme fits exactly with Destiny. I was just waiting for a Cryptarch to be able to you know, tell me how poorly my random rolls were. But so you've been playing the Division, Destiny, right? I mean, you've been talking about this, kind of chipping away at the story. You've gone back through with characters. So where are you at light level wise? And next week on April 12th, there's a light level increase. There's a drop in Destiny in terms of new content with Prison of Elders. There's the new incursion mode with the Division. So, you know, the nice thing is that there's, in both of those games, there's good stuff to play. So where are you at light level wise with Destiny? Are you going to be ready to dive into this new content?
Yeah, you know, my light level is pretty low, and I was talking to the guys last night. The reason is, you know, I'm not 300, I'm not 290, and the reason is we've been playing so much story together because my brother Spiral, I sent them a copy of the game, an extra copy I had, so we've been going through all the story with him. And that means that my weekly play session, I'm getting zero marks. I'm getting no money at all. As a matter of fact, if Zerg shows up with something good, I have to try to sneak in extra sessions to make some strange coins. So we're going to be converting after April 12th, we'll be converting over to running some end game content like dailies and weeklies and Prison of Elders. So yeah, my light level's pretty low. I'm not a 300. And I'm going to cover Destiny, the update, in my news story. But unless you guys have anything else, I'm going to go right into our first break, which is this week's community news. Well, the first thing in this week's community news is, if you visit bandofgamers.net, you'll notice we have a new banner in background. And I want to take a moment to thank everybody who submitted characters for our banner and background. Now, we've been rocking the Destiny theme where myself, DB Osiris, and Zeus all contributed our avatars to that. And we had that kind of Band of Brothers look where we had a bunch of our avatars lined up standing on the ridge line on the moon. Well, we wanted to do something different. Destiny is now a couple-year-old game, so figured we'd go with something new, band of ga and go with a band of gamers inside of the Division. And if you visit our site now, if you look at the YouTube site or the Twitter page or the Facebook page, you may see different characters there. But if you're at bandagamers.net, I want to go through the avatars and get everybody credit. All the way on the most on the leftmost side is myself, wearing the casual red and blue jacket. And then to my right is CTM, a good buddy of mine, also from the Northeast. And then to his right, in really a beige kind of outfit, is DBQ. And to his right in the middle, is a good friend Firefly. And nice to have the ladies in there. And to her right, wearing almost an all blue jacket and a completely black gun, is my brother Spiral. I snagged that shot when we were doing some co-op on Saturday. To his right, we have Vixen Wild. And to her right, we have Downriver Rat. So I want to thank you all for submitting your avatars from the Division. I know it wasn't easy. It was tough to take the picture in the first place. So thank you, everybody. I think it came out well. You can see in the banner, for those listening on iTunes or on Android, in the banner, we're actually all standing in one of the control rooms, security rooms. But in the background, we're standing in front of the library, so in front of the JTF headquarters. So that's it. So that's the news there. And let's see what other community news we have. I think we got Google Plus working now. So if you're on Google Plus, you should start seeing Band of Gamers updates showing up there. For some reason, they were showing up privately because of just the way Google Plus is. So if we think we change that. And on to our second community here, we want to talk about the casual adult racers, the car club, we like to call them. You can now access their weekly top five using a nice URL. So those of you who are listening while you're driving, all you have to do is go to casualadultgamers.com/car, C-A-R, and that'll take you to Solo Racer X's YouTube playlist. And I love this week's top five was just on par with all of them. Great. And I don't know about you guys, but my favorite was, I think it had to be number two. I really liked them all. I bounced around between my favorites, but number two just had me laughing. And so you got to check it out. So if either go to YouTube and search on Solar Racer X, or just go to casualadultgamers.com/car, and that'll redirect you over to the playlist on YouTube. And the Car Club also has some big news coming next week. It was going to happen today, but I got too busy yesterday and couldn't finish it. So the Car Club has big news coming next week, and we'll announce that here. Probably be announced online before then, but we'll announce it here as well. And if you're ever around on Sunday nights, 8 to 10 Eastern Time, they have, right now they're running 10 to 12 racers, but with all the new limits in Forza and parties, they have room for more people. If you just want to hang out, laugh, and have fun and race in Forza 6, check out the Casual Adult Racers at casualadultgamers.com. And that's it for this week's community news. All right, guys, let's rock it right into this week's news and gaming. And DBQ, why don't you start us off?
So I think I'm going to get on a soapbox here, and feel free to push me off at some point in time. So my community, my news this week is is a combo. It's spinning out of an article off of Forbes Games. It's about the Blizzard game Overwatch, where the hero character Tracer had a sultry pose, kind of a sexy pose, with her backside toward the camera, in a kind of suggestive way, and they removed it. Right. So Overwatch is in beta. It's not even a release game yet, and so the developers of the game decided that this was not the way that they wanted to portray their character, and they removed that pose. There was an uproar on the internet, as the internet can be, and at the same time that there's this uproar about a fictional character and her pose, there is a very quiet firing that happens at Nintendo. So Nintendo of America fired one of their marketing people. The last name is Knapp. But she is a marketing ad rep from Nintendo who was targeted by a number of internet community, NeoGAF, Gamersgate related people, even to the point where, as the Forbes article talks about, where they were harassing her, sending her not only direct messages from Twitter, but also sending Nintendo messages about her. So this was happening. Her name is Allison Rapp, and she had a marketing position with Nintendo. They were targeting her for being involved with the quote-unquote censorship of localization that Nintendo has. Nintendo of America eliminated certain segments of the most recent 3DS game Fire Emblem Fates, where, for cultural reasons, right? And I completely agree with this, that this is, in a non-internet era, this is a company deciding what's appropriate for one market versus the other, where they took out a scene where you could drug a female character to get her to fall in love with you. Nintendo of America also took out a slider in the character creation of Xenoblade Chronicles X, which allows you to increase or decrease breast sizes. So Nintendo of America is making cultural choices based on what is appropriate for the audience that they're selling to, whether it's censorship or not. I think my argument is doesn't necessarily matter. What matters is that there's a number of people who have taken it upon themselves to then harass an individual and harass the company that she works for to try to get her removed from her position. And so this is where I'm slowing down, stepping off my soapbox, right? That at the same time that the internet can get in an uproar about the and digital character, that this news about a human is not even covered necessarily in the media. So I wanted to bring it up and kind of open it up for comments. Gray, you had a question, or you had a point here in terms of company freedom or individual freedom.
Yeah, you know, I just want to say that as long as these companies are within the law, they're free to do whatever they want. And then us as consumers, if we don't like what they do, we either elect politicians to change the law, or we don't buy their product. I understand that game companies are companies that want to maintain PR, and that they're gonna in certain areas, they're gonna take out certain features. I mean, and every company is different, right? So we can go back to the Mortal Kombat on Sega versus Nintendo, right? Where one had red blood and one had green blood, right? So, you know, they're free to do it. It says something about them when, you know, some companies are more sensitive than others, you know. And so I think it's fine. I think a game company should be able to add or subtract any feature they want. If they want to take out the feature to change how big your feet are, or other parts of your body, then that's let them do whatever they want. The game will be rated by the independent rating agency, and if it'll either get an E or an M or a T or whatever. But why anybody would berate somebody who worked at a company who's just making decisions based on their own preferences? I mean, they live in a Japan is a free country, the United States is a free country. This is they nobody broke any laws. Nobody should be losing their job for following what their own thoughts and feelings. Having said that, I think it was probably wise, and I don't know what the rating of Overwatch is going to be. It kind of looks cartoony, so I'm thinking T. But if it's where were they promoting this? Was it online? Most of the internet is based on the 13 and up crowd, and so if they were marketing it in areas that were a lot of young adults or children were visiting, then yeah, it probably made sense to take it out. If I was going to market a T-rated game, I would not market it with M-rated pictures, or maybe even PG-16 or 15 features. I just you got to be age appropriate, right? And if you're going after an M-rated crowd and an M-rated, ad blitz, then that's what you do, right? Like we've seen games do that, right? There are M-rated games out there that have big ad blitzes, and they don't try to blanket the internet, at least all the sites that the younger generation is hanging out on. And that's just the way it works, I guess. Go ahead, Zeus. What did you have to say?
I was just going to mention as a point of clarification, reading some of the articles. So, Nintendo currently claims that, her termination had nothing to do with the harassment and the emails or whatever communiques sent in by the third parties who were harassing her. Supposedly she was terminated because she was moonlighting, and Nintendo claims that that is a strict no-no, in terms of policy. And of course, as you would imagine, there's a little back and forth between, a corporation and an employee who's been terminated. So, I mean, I guess my own read is, were they operating within their legal bounds? Sure. It's a little sketchy, that they became aware of it, via this harassment. I would say I've worked at companies and I've been in management where we definitely wouldn't have touched that with a 10-foot pole. Like something we were made aware of. Via a channel that we, should not have been supportive of. I think we would have let the heat on this die down a little bit, before we would have mentioned it. And we probably would have gone to that individual and said, "Hey, we're not down with the harassment you're receiving, but, we've become aware that you're moonlighting and you may want to knock that off or else we will be taking action, in a month or two, or we'll revisit it next quarter." But there's no way in the world any HR department for a corporation I've been around would have been down with terminating an employee based on something you became aware of, because that employee was being harassed. It would just leave you too open to legal backlash. So it still seems a little sketchy, what Nintendo did, even though in the strictest terms of the sense, it does look like they, were legal. I was about to say clean, and I would say I don't think they're clean, but they are legal.
No, I think you're right, Zeus. As somebody who manages people and who has spent plenty of time in HR over the last couple of years, you're exactly right. Like, it may be company policy not to moonlight, but the reason that they know about it is through this online harassment. And the best bet would have been to go to this individual, personally and say, here's what we know, here's your chance, let's not air this all, and this all happened while she's on her honeymoon in Japan. I think that there's, I guess, I agree with you. I agree with both of you, and I'm raising this now as more of a public awareness, right? That Zeus, you're absolutely right. Like the company could have handled this differently, even if an individual was in the wrong, and Gray, you're correct as well that it's not really censorship if the company that's creating the project decides to change it. It's censorship if an outside agency or a government body decides to make it censorship or to prevent somebody from expressing what the artistic intent was. You know, I think that the piece here is, as gamers, as three or four male gamers, that this is something that we should be aware of and be able to speak up about. So, Gray, you're a family man. What thoughts do you have on this?
Yeah, I just want to, just a final comment from me on this is, you know, you just got to be, just be real. Just be a person. You don't, you know, if she was fired on her honeymoon because they found out she was moonlighting because somebody was harassing her, you know, like Zeus says, don't touch that with a 10-foot pole. But, you know, it's, you know, just be a person first. Be a person first. Be real people. Be nice to people. You know, don't. Letting somebody go because of something like that, especially during their honeymoon or when they're getting harassed and already under fire for maybe a company policy, it just stinks. And again, we probably don't have the full story, but let's just all keep it real and be, you know, treat each other decently.
Sounds like a good transition. So, who else has news?
I'll go ahead and throw some out. You know, first up, and I'll try and get through these quickly. You know, there's a story over on Game Insider mentioning that the Division remains at the top according to the latest UK sales charts. So they don't really give any specific statistics, but you know, they do mention that the Division was at the top in the top 20, which I think is its second month, or going into its second month. Other games in that field include Grand Theft Auto V. Amazing. Don't understand. Game keeps selling so much. Call of Duty Spec Ops 3, Star Wars Battlefront, WWE 2K16, Fallout 4, Forza Motorsport 6, I was surprised, and Just Cause 3. So it's always kind of interesting to look at the UK charts because their gaming tastes tend to be a good skosh different than the US's, and certainly different, you know, than the world's. It seems like you rarely see any kind of Eastern games or Japanese games in these charts. You know, I would say it seems like the Brits definitely favor Western style games, even, you know, more than we do. And then, you know, for more specific sales numbers, you know, you know, the Division has sold 443,000 units through the last week of March on the PS4 globally. So that's a pretty solid showing. On the Xbox One, they've sold an additional 272,000 units, so well over half a million units. So it's pretty impressive. So any of that news surprise you on how well the Division's doing across all the platforms?
You know, I don't. I can't explain why it's doing so well. I mean, I do love the co-op, and I think there's that element of this, you know, trying to survive a catastrophe. You know, I think that's why a lot of the draw to Fallout. But I don't know, Paul. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that I think that the Division not only hits at a really nice time for people who are Destiny fans, but it crosses that boundary, right? That it is a traditional military. There's a lot there for a lot of people, and so you know, I'll be really interested to see how the sales numbers stay or what the DLC numbers look like in terms of, you know, as this raid incursion happens, as the first DLC drops, is this something that people that has legs, you know? I'm one who's left it. Gray, you're somebody who has stuck with it, so I'm really curious to see how many people stick with it.
Yeah, you know, I can see a lot of my friends who game pretty regularly are, you know, they're already level 30s and maxed out And I don't know how long they're going to keep playing it. I really don't. But for me, it being more of a casual gamer, I'll be playing it for a while, I can tell.
It's I don't know how to characterize it. So, you know, we talked about The Division a few weeks ago. My feelings were, I mean, it was solid. It didn't, you know, it didn't cause me to see stars or anything. So, but maybe it's just the case of, you know, they just picked a really awesome sweet spot to release that game where there's not a lot being released on either side of it that's really challenging in terms of popularity. And like you said, Gray, I think more and more of a premium is being placed on drop-in, drop-out co-op play, and just games that feature, you know, not a whole lot of friction and big obstacles to mantle to get into multiplayer. So I would attribute most of its success to that. Speaking of multiplayer, you know, the other story that I came across was that the Doom beta has been running. I didn't really see exactly what the dates were. I wasn't even consciously aware. I guess if you bought one of the more recent Wolfenstein games, you got a key to get into the beta. But what's interesting is you know, Andrew Reiner, who I think is the editor in chief at Game Informer, you know, got a chance to get some hands-on time, and he didn't write this post. A staff writer wrote it up about his experiences, and one of the things he mentioned is, you know, it is very much akin to Quake 3 and Unreal Tournament gameplay. So I'm sure, I know that there's a lot of people, particularly who are heavily laced with PC gamer DNA, who go thumbs up to that, right? But the thing that's interesting is they mentioned that, you know, probably out of peer pressure, they also are trying to wire in a lot of more, not necessarily more, but a lot of modern takes on multiplayer games, including like a Call of Duty-like progression and something that sounds like it's equivalent to perks. And it's when the game runs into those elements that you know, Reiner and maybe some other people at Game Informer are feeling like the game gets a little janky and is problematic. Were any of you guys aware of this beta going on?
I knew it was out there. You know, I remember if you bought the what, the New Order, Wolfenstein the New Order, that you had, there was an insert for the Doom beta, and that was a 2014 game. So yeah, yeah, I'd be curious to see. I mean, I think that the idea of the unlocks, the player progression, you know, that same thing that we're just talking about with Destiny and the Division in terms of long-term hooks to keep people coming back to, if that works for Doom, which is very much a twitch-based shooter.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Gray, did you have any thoughts on the Doom beta, or have you been too consumed sitting on pins and needles waiting for a certain update for a game that is pretty near and dear to your own heart?
You know, I haven't. Yeah, I don't know why. I always kind of thought of Doom and Quake as one dimensional. I never even bought. Well, I take that back. I did buy the Doom collection. I think it was on sale for a buck on Steam once, but I had not ever purchased those games. However, Unreal Tournament to me seemed like the full boat. I mean, that was you know, jaw-dropping, gorgeous graphics, and you know, everything. Deathmatch, team deathmatch, capture flag, you know, and even Unreal. Oh, I don't know. I have so many different Unreals because they always seemed like they were the full thing, right? They were usually multiplayer only, but they were the full gamut. They had all kinds of different modes for everybody, including bots. And it was they were just a lot of fun. I actually finished the you know, play through the entire single player of an Unreal Tournament, or you versus the bot, I guess. An Unreal Tournament. The end was really hard, but now never get into Doom or Quake. Just always saw them as being more one-dimensional, and an Unreal Tournament being more of the full boat. But I don't know. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I can absolutely see that. You know, that the article kind of pointed out, I guess more and more, you know, those games, that style of game, is kind of becoming its own niche, particularly as more and more first-person shooters with multiplayer elements are going, you know, a different route. You know, it's pretty difficult to track down a first-person shooter multiplayer game where you run around the map and can pick up, you know, instances of every single type of weapon and have access to all the weapons, you know, at any one time. So, yeah, it's unfortunately becoming kind of a rare beast, like RTSs are, you know, which I guess is why, you know, we've been so hot to put them in our Sunday afternoon multiplayer track. So, so yeah, I don't know, but I am curious, Gray, to hear about the April update of Destiny, because when I first saw it, I wasn't too impressed by what I heard was coming, but it sounds like maybe you're more focused on what's coming down the pike.
Yeah, I've been trying to keep track of it only because, you know, it is my Sunday 6 p.m. type of gameplay with a couple of friends, and here's what we found out in the latest update. Of course, there is another update coming out tomorrow, or Wednesday, I guess Wednesday, so by the time you hear this, the newest update's probably already rolling out, but if you missed last week's, here's what you get. First of all, I think one of the biggest things for those people who are infusing their lower level weapons with higher level weapons, it's now going to be a one for one. In other words, if you're infusing a 270 with a 320, that 270 will get everything to 320. It'll go all the way up. It won't be an incremental step up anymore. I personally haven't done any of that because I think, as I talked about earlier, I don't have any really great gear, but I know people who have and kind of were bummed out about that. Getting a lot of new armor sets. They really, for the avid players playing all the time, there's a lot of new different armor and a new way to customize it with like a tint or a shade this different armor has different stripes of lights and you can change it from red or blue or white. There's also more. There's sterling treasures. There's chroma is that light effect I talked about. I think one of the biggest things for me was that they're making the vault bigger, so that's great. So we're getting one more page instead of just two pages. We'll have three pages for our weapons and our armor. And there are a lot of new year one exotics that are coming out and legendaries that are coming out as year two, and they're going to be coming out as drops that you just get. Now, the ones I wanted aren't coming, but there's several, including Shadow Price, Badger, Hi-Fixer, Grim Citizen. A lot of those are coming back. So I think a lot of people would be happy about that because they kind of miss using those guns because they're not very high level anymore. So, I think there's new emotes. There's a lot of new stuff coming. So, there is already 2 hours worth of live stream on YouTube and Bungie's channel, and plenty of new stuff coming out. I don't think, as far as the single player co-op player, there's going to be a whole lot. Again, this is a free update for people who bought The Taken King. But, it should be fun, and I think they're tweaking some things to make the game a little bit more playable. You know, they're constantly balancing it, and I think the changes to the that we learned about last week with the Prison of Elders is going to be a huge help, and now some of these things with the weapons is going to be a huge help to get us, our favorite weapons back or to help us, upgrade or infuse our weapons. So that is my news story, and did you guys have anything on that? I can't see.
Gray, how can you talk about the Destiny without having DBQ Hams have something to say? Right? Come on. I've got three characters. One is over 300. The other two are 295, 296. I've been infusing, and this whole idea of one-to-one infusion sounds wonderful. I had a couple helmets just the other week, actually, that I infused, but I had one at 294 and one at 295, and so I had to infuse twice because I knew that jumping my helmet from the 280s up to the 295 wasn't going to happen all at once, and so I did one and then had to do the second one. And so the idea of, that uses up weapon parts or armor materials or other collectible pieces. It uses up legendary marks, so being able to jump from wherever to whatever your high-end armor or weapon that you're trying to infuse to will make that slope, that ramp, a whole lot easier. So yes, I think that's a good thing. I've been reading on Planet Destiny and listening to other Destiny podcasts about people who are concerned about the most recent update, talking about the Eververse, the DLC with paid money, paid silver, being able to sell some of these, the chroma, some of the color schemes and the armor sets that you were talking about. So there's been some controversy within the Destiny universe of, is this the first time that Activision is kind of stepping over the bounds of paying to win? The idea of being able to buy some of these new armor sets. My thought is that the armor sets only drop at a light level of 3, and so having to infuse them up to something higher means that the player has run some type of higher level content in order to get those higher level armor sets. So, but I suppose if you're a player that is really about the collecting, then this may feel cheapened. That's also the fact that some of the paid treasure boxes that you can buy with real money also will give you rep boosts, which is not quite the same as experience boosts in like some free-to-play MMOs where you can get a rep boost or an XP boost. But at the same time, the rep gear from the Vanguard and the Crucible are going to be some of those things that are giving you some of the new upgraded guns that you were talking about, Gray. So it really is kind of dancing across that line of can you buy your way to high-end gear? But I think they're still doing okay in terms of you still have to run the content, you still have to play the game in order to get that high-end gear. So I'm okay with these new updates. I'm glad for them. I'm looking forward to being able to run the Prison of Elders, and I think that it allows people like you, Gray, who aren't really high in light level, it gives you additional content to keep that ramp going so that you can stay on board through the rest of the year. So that's my thoughts on it. I'm glad for it. I'd be interested to see what happens. Zeus, I know that you haven't been a big Destiny guy. Do you have any thoughts on any of the DLC or the paid, microtransactions that Destiny is inching their way toward?
Not in particularly. I mean, it's just something interesting for me to watch. We've tried to do MMOs on console. That hasn't really panned out. Although Sony keeps kind of pushing. I can't remember what it's called. DC, whatever the DC game is that they give you for free. But they definitely want you to be playing that, so they keep pushing that at you. Somewhere somebody's going to have to monetize something in order to keep producing content, and it seems that despite the fact that Bungie is who they are and Activision is who they are, it seems like there's no way to do that for something that is very MMO-like, unless you eventually start charging for it. So it's just kind of an interesting thing to see unfold. What I've mentioned to other people before is you may not care for Destiny, it may not be, the most important thing to you, but if you're a gamer and you kind of watch the industry and you want to know where game is going, you kind of have to at least watch and be conscious of what's going on with Destiny, because it's very experimental and it's very experiential, and there's really never been anything like that in the gaming marketplace before. So and you can rest assured that if Destiny gets it right, Like every other major publisher is going to be trying to do the same thing. So it's just kind of interesting to see it all, how it all unfolds.
You know, I agree, but as I watch this journey, I'm confused. it's almost like somebody trying to drive somewhere without a map, and I'm confused on why they're making the decisions they make and why they take the turns they do. It's like it's just a very interesting, and having played the game, and even playing through the single player again, you know, why they change certain things. Like, why would you unlock a Dock Below mission before I finish the original 20 missions? And just a lot of the decisions they make, some of them are just fantastically awesome, but others just leave me scratching my head saying, I would never have guessed you would have tried that. So, very interesting stuff, DB.
Yeah, I think they are definitely kind of stumbling their way through this new model. So, you know, I think in some of the Dark Below stuff, they've tried to integrate it in so it feels more legit within a story, but it also kind of changes the ramp of how people are experiencing that, or the level caps of some of those levels. So, yeah, I think that there's a lot of room for that kind of shared world MMO type of game that isn't waiting for hotbars and cooldowns in the traditional World of Warcraft standard. What Zeus, you were talking about in terms of how well the Division is selling, I think it is a testament to that as well. And so whether it's Destiny or the Division or whatever comes next that tries to take on this idea of being able to have an enjoyable solo experience, but also have the same type of drop in and drop out that you were talking about, Gray. You know, this is a model that we as gamers, there's a lot to like here, because there's a lot of ways that we can interact with our games depending on the amount of time that we have in an evening, the amount of the availability of our friends, and so that it allows us to experience a game world regardless of what our social situation is for that day. And that's a good thing. I think that's a benefit for us as gamers.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Any final thoughts, Zeus?
No, DB wrapped it up so well, I felt like I should have had a glass of wine in my hand and offer him a toast for rounding that out the conversation so well.
Well done, DB. And now I'm looking at the time, and we're about at the end of the show here, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up if you guys don't object. And thank you all for listening to us as we talked about our passion, gaming, and what we've been playing and all the things in the news. And of course, we'll be right back here next week. If you enjoy the podcast, tell a friend. Let them know they can get us. Bandofgamers.net is our website. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter and now Google+. And we have links to all of that up at bandofgamers.net. And on behalf of DBQ Hams, who you can find on Twitch as DBQ Hams, Zeus Adamus, who you can find his YouTube channel is Rounding Off Infinity, and myself, Greylock3491, I want to thank you for listening, and until the next time we talk, peace.